Welcome and thank you very much for joining us on episode 158 of the Blazers Edge podcast, presented to you today by BlazersEdge.com. I'm your weekend host, Chris Lucia.
Yes, you are. And I am your weekend co-host, Brandon Goldner. Getting in touch with us is super easy. You can hit us up at BlazersEdgePodcast@gmail.com or at BlazersEdge on Twitter or Facebook, Blazers.Edge on Instagram. And if you'd like to give us a rating, a review, or a subscription, you can find us on Google Play, YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever. Doesn't matter. We're there. Whether you like the show or hate the show, please leave us a comment because we would love to hear from you.
Returning this week to the Blazers Edge Weekend Podcast for probably the, 278th time is Blazers Edge contributor Eric Griffith. Eric, thanks for coming on, dude.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm looking forward to our discussion today.
Absolutely, man. I'm excited about this because this is like, I love covering the Blazers. I love watching the team. I love diving deep into the analysis. I love, you know, hearing other people's hot takes about the team. I love talking about salary cap, all that stuff. I love it. I love doing that for the majority of the year. But this is the time in the off season where we get a little bit of an opportunity. The news is very slowly trickling in. So unless you want to hear us, you know, really go over the salary cap ramifications of the CJ McCollum deal earlier this week and the Mo Harkless deal ad nauseum, you can find that on BlazersEdge.com. There's going to be tons of analysis for that. But the podcast this week is going to be a little bit less serious because I want to go back and look in the past, and I want to talk about our favorite role players of all time. And these are going to be personal lists. They're going to be completely arbitrary. So they don't, the only rule here is that to make this list between me, Brandon, and Eric, our own personal list, it can't be a major contributor on the court. So and it can't be like a star player or anything. And the way we kind of narrowed it down was saying, you know, like you could say someone who was, you know, a role player or a bench guy, but you couldn't say someone like Damon Stoudemire. I mean, even though he wasn't an all-star or star player, we're not going to go that far. So
if I could just interject real quick with some breaking news, I believe this is the first time for all of the many times we've had Eric Griffith on the pod that I can actually see, is that real sunlight pouring into your room, Eric? Do I have that right?
We're recording in the afternoon for once. So, you know, you guys won't be editing at 2 a.m. to rush us up on Saturday.
Just in case anyone doesn't know, Eric joins us from the East Coast, and he's usually very generous with his time, recording a little bit later at night. But yeah, that is some real sunlight. Man, your skin has like a rosy hue to it. I love it.
We're giving Eric a break here because, like Brandon said, he's on the East Coast. We're usually recording at like, 7, 8, 9 Pacific time. So Eric is staying up, sometimes up to midnight to record this podcast for you guys. So we're giving him a break. I think it's about 5:30 his time. But I want to get right into this because there's so many different guys we could cover. And I think our lists are going to be pretty different from each other. We didn't go over these with each other beforehand. So hopefully we catch each other by surprise a little bit with these. And hopefully there's not too much overlap. So I'm going to start. This is a serious pick. I'm hoping that we're not all going to be as serious with these picks as we progress with these. But I'm going to throw this one out there. Wes Matthews. Yeah, obviously, he was a serious contributor to the team. But the teams that he was on, the ones that achieved the most success, you had that clear line there where it was LaMarcus's team. And then you had Damian Lillard being the next most serious contributor. And then you could argue from there on who was the most serious contributor. I'm going to call Wesley Matthews a role player on those, 2009 to 2014, 2015 teams. Look at his past to me. I mean, the guy goes undrafted, signs with Utah, pretty much makes the team in Utah as I think he was one of the last guys to kind of make the team there. He wasn't expected to be a serious role player or a serious contributor. And then due to some injuries and some attrition with the players there. He got thrust into a serious role there. I think he ended up starting a number of games his rookie season as an undrafted signed free agent. And then we obviously know what happened after that. The Blazers signed him to that deal that the Utah Jazz weren't able to match. He came in to the Blazers, immediately became the heart and soul of that team, became a locker room leader. I think Wesley Matthews, to me, kind of embodies what a role player is. So he's number one on my list.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair, particularly when you think about the role that he was brought in to play, which is a backup to Brandon Roy. And of course, we know what happened with that. Yeah, he had a good, if I remember correctly, he had a really good playoff series with Utah and parlayed that into restricted free agency. And actually, I think the subsequent year, the Blazers threw an offer at the Utah Jazz's Paul Millsap, didn't end up getting him. But yeah, I agree. I mean, definitely the heart and soul of the team. And it's just, it was a lot of fun to watch his progression, like you said, from an undrafted player to someone who is so critical to the success of the Blazers and just their emotional temperature. And it was good to see him get paid too in Dallas. Big ups to Mark Cuban.
I hate to be the voice of dissension, but I think he's almost too good to be a role player. I mean, the guy got a max contract. He was arguably the third best player on a 54-win team. You could, you know, if he was playing in the East, he might have been an all-star. Kyle Korver can make an all-star team. I can see a world in which Wes Matthews could sneak in on a particularly weak year as an injury reserve. So I'd say he's probably the upper limit of what we'd even define as a role player. He was so good.
Kyle Korver making the all-star team is like the dumbest thing ever, by the way. I don't care how good he is at shooting threes.
I mean, I think we talked about this on the pod before. That was your 2004 Pistons type vote that he got, because Millsap and Teague and he and Horford, did they have three or four guys?
I think they had four, yeah.
Because they were on, that was the year they won like 63 games, I think. So they just said, how many Hawks can we fit onto that Eastern Conference All-Star team?
Remember when it was like the Spurs of the East? Like it was going to be this new dynasty of like Hawks dominance.
I know.
Things don't always work out the way you think they're going to.
And now they got Dwight Howard. So, Brandon, I know that you're itching to let us know some of the guys that you got on your list. So who you got first off?
Yeah, for sure. So I listened very carefully, Chris, to the rules that you laid out. Okay.
I broke my own rules right off the bat.
Yeah, first of all, I'm going to have to agree with Eric. I mean, I wasn't going to be the wet blanket, but since he already went there, yeah, I think Wesley Matthews might have been too good. But you said basically not a star player. So you didn't say anything about star broadcasters. So my first pick is kind of a dual pick. I'm going to go with Mike Barrett and Mike Rice. Applause, please. Mike Barrett and Mike Rice. I mean, I'm 31 years old. And for me, not growing up with the team, but going through such a huge portion of my life where Mike Barrett and Mike Rice were synonymous with Blazers basketball. You know, Mike Rice, a relatively successful player, coach, interesting human being. I think he's the first and only NBA broadcaster to be kicked out of a game by NBA officials, which is pretty rad. Mike Barrett, super awesome guy. He went to the same high school as my wife, West Albany High School, and as well as Blazers Edge contributor Brian Freeman. So he's an Oregon kid. And I don't know. It's not only that they are so ingrained in Blazers lore. I genuinely like the way that they handled their broadcast. Personally, I know that they got a lot of flack. You know, Mike Rice playing the crazy drunk uncle role. But I genuinely enjoyed listening to them, and they're going to be missed. So my first pick, Mike and Mike.
Definitely a worthy pick. I think the wild one for me is he's probably my favorite broadcasting voice of all time. I love listening to Mike Rice. I love the malapropisms. I love that he didn't take the job super seriously, but when it was time, you know, to take it seriously and break down a play, he had that coaching ability where he was able to say, hey, you know, the Blazers are coming out of a timeout. This is something that you can look for. We talked about Mike Rice and Mike Barrett quite a bit a few weeks ago, if you want to check that out. But definitely Mike Rice and Mike Barrett, they're some pretty popular names around here. I think they're going to go down in Blazer lore as some of our favorite Blazers personalities of all time. Moving on, Eric, I know that you're going to have a pretty interesting list here because you've been following the team a long time. You're kind of a what I would consider kind of a historical junkie for the team. You're one of those guys who really likes to go back and find some of the lesser known stuff, or it's kind of the forgotten stuff that we don't necessarily talk about anymore. So involving the Blazers. So I want to hear what you have for your first pick as your favorite role player of all time.
Well, this might be a little bit disappointing then, because one of the things that, about role players is it's a little tough to really go back and get a sense for who the popular role players are from a historical perspective, because so much of this is intangibles. You know, like Wes Matthews had a lot of hustle at heart and was super popular. Mike and Mike, experiencing them growing up listening to the team, so they're great role players. You kind of lose that reading the history books. And so most of my list is a little more present. And so the first guy I'm going to go with is Myers Leonard. And this is more of a speculative pick because Chris and I have talked about this on the podcast before, where we're hoping Myers Leonard transforms into a role player this season. And once we get over the fact that he's probably never going to be a starter, we're going to be able to appreciate what he can bring to the game and the fact that, you know what, he can score 11 consecutive points against the Indiana Pacers. And in the right circumstances, he can play some pretty solid defense against maybe Marc Gasol. And so I'm really looking forward to Myers Leonard becoming my favorite role player this season once he adjusts to his new contract and his new spot on the team.
That's a perfect pick considering, like you just mentioned, the contract he just signed. We've been banging this drum for a while, though, that it's a perception there based on what, you know, Myers Leonard is getting or what they expect him to get now that he's got this reasonable contract, considering the climate of the current CBA and the salary cap and the spending that went on this summer. Myers got a very reasonable deal, so we're expecting him to come in and not have those massive expectations that he's had, last season and maybe a little bit the season before.
And I don't know if any of the listeners follow him on Twitter, but I would highly recommend it. The other thing in his favor for being a, you know, famous role player for the Portland Trail Blazers is that he is a Portland and Oregon junkie, it seems. He seems to genuinely love living in Portland. He just asked fans earlier this month for recommendations on where to go on a Jeep road trip across the state. And so I think he has a good chance to actually integrate himself really well into the community, which is pretty cool for a role player.
And he's got a super cute dog too, by the way. Shout out to Bella.
So he checks off, I mean, how many boxes on that role player list. So absolutely a solid pick there. I'm gonna go back to, I think, yeah, the summer of 2006 here. This would be Brandon Roy, LaMarcus Aldridge's rookie year. This is a guy I try to bring up on the podcast as much as I can because I really appreciate everything that he did while he was in Portland. This is Ime Udoka. The guy was a last-minute training camp invite, wasn't even expected to be one of those guys to even compete for a spot on the team when he got invited, let alone make the team. Because of some injuries, I think Travis Outlaw was one of the guys who was injured at the time, maybe Martell Webster. My memory is getting a little foggy going back a decade here, but a number of injuries on the wings allowed Ime Udoka to get into training camp and actually make the team and then become a starter for, I think, 76 games that year. The guy was on pretty much a minimum contract. After that, he signed with the Spurs for, I think, about $2-3 million. So he's able to cash in a little bit on that year that he had with the Blazers. And then he joined the San Antonio Spurs coaching staff. So I don't know what more you need to say about being a solid role player than a guy who gets hired on after his playing days to be an assistant coach in San Antonio.
You know, Chris, when you floated this topic, I was absolutely convinced that Ime would be on your list. I think that you brought him up like every third podcast.
Yeah.
Every chance that you get.
As often as I can.
Let me ask, do you have an Ime jersey there tucked away in your closet?
It's right next to the Jerry Stackhouse 76ers jersey.
I cannot at this point in my life, I can't afford to get the custom jerseys, but maybe at some point if I'm able to afford that, yeah, I think that would be the first throwback jersey I'd probably get is a Ime Udoka 2006-2007 Blazers jersey. I think that would be a solid one. And, one last thing on him. I mentioned everything about, coaching and getting in with the San Antonio Spurs and all that. But the dude on such a small contract gave so much of his time. He was from Portland, went to Portland State, gave a ton of his time to charities. The guy on a minimum contract donated a ton of money to local charities in Portland. So good on him. We really appreciate him. Ime Udoka, definitely one of my all-time favorite Blazer heroes. Brandon, who do you got next?
Well, you know, when I heard that you picked Wesley Matthews as your first pick, I decided I would cheat a little bit too. This player was, for all intents and purposes, a role player when he was with Portland, although he went on to accomplish greater things. And I'm talking about Jermaine O'Neal. Oh.
Absolutely. I'm waiting for someone to choose him so I could protest vigorously that he is not a role player. He was a bench warmer. He never had a role in Portland. And then he went on to be an all-star. He's anything but a role player.
You know what, Eric? He played a very important role. He played a role, the role of teaching all Blazers fans a lesson, which is to don't necessarily give up on your development players too soon. I mean, I know that the Blazers team, the way that they were constructed at the time, there weren't really a ton of minutes for him. I remember, like, I wasn't as keyed in to the team when he was with the club as I am today, but I just remember being really, really surprised at how good he became in Indiana. And I don't know if either of you had any sense at all that he would end up being not only a starter, but an excellent starter once he left the team. I mean, when he went to Indiana and did what he did, I was shocked. I don't know how either of you felt about that.
I don't know if I predicted, seven-time All-Star or whatever it was, and then getting the massive contract that he did and the role that he did. I'm not sure if I predicted that, but I don't think there's any Blazer fans that think that he was at or anywhere near his ceiling in Portland. I think his absolute floor at the time, the Blazer fans thinking, was a contributing role player and a solid starter, I would imagine.
And here's the downside to that. Now, when Noah Vonleh is still on the team in 2020, we're going to have to listen to everyone saying, well, we don't want to make another Jermaine O'Neal mistake.
I think that's a refrain that we're going to hear as long as Jermaine O'Neal has the possibility of coming out of retirement to play with a contender, which there have been rumblings about. I mean, he had a really, really long career, and I think I did hear that he was considering possibly coming back to the Warriors now that they have KD. Ridiculous.
That would be bonkers. Since you had a bit of a protest there on that Jermaine O'Neal pick, Eric, I'm very interested to hear your next pick, and I'm wondering if Brandon is going to come strong out of the gates here protesting your pick as a response.
Well, now that I know we're all cheating, I'm really tempted to switch to Arvydas Sabonis, but I can't bring myself to violate the rules to that extent because he was way too good.
Amen.
So instead, I'm going to go in reverse chronological order, and the next guy on my list would be Travis Outlaw, number 25. And I'm choosing him because I used to enjoy the kind of the outlandishness he brought to the court, where he had a lot of the no, yes type of shots, especially in the fourth quarter. He had this great synergy with Brandon Roy, where when Nate McMillan was running that infamous 1-4 flat for Brandon Roy, the backup option in the fourth quarter was often just give Outlaw the ball and let him shoot. And my favorite example of that was against the Hawks, and I think it was February of 2008 during the season when they went 41-41, and Outlaw took an isolation play at the top of the key for dribble for 20 seconds, and then hit a buzzer-beating, game-winning fadeaway from 19-20 feet out, which was just the epitome of Travis Outlaw, I think.
The thing I'm always going to remember about Trout, his shoulders were so wide. He's probably the only NBA player whose shoulder width was greater than his wingspan, and maybe not quite that wide, but oh my.
Also, the ironic last name, Travis Outlaw, with his dad being the sheriff down there in Mississippi where he was from. So that was always interesting. And that nickname, Trout, that was one of those nicknames that I very rarely said out loud, but you saw it in Blazers Edge comments all the time, and I'm wondering if that was similar for other people. You write it down and you see it there, but you never really say it out loud. That's how it was for me.
Well, it's on Basketball Reference now, so we know it must be an official nickname if it's there.
It's fact.
Anyway, the other I like what you're saying about him being the son of a sheriff, because the other thing about Trout was that he was one of the first picks the team made. I think this was actually pre-Kevin Pritchard. He was one of the first picks the team made, though, with the intention of turning over a new leaf and getting past the Jailblazer era. And I think he was a straight-out of high school pick. And so the team hadn't quite turned the corner yet. And so he was one of the original Brandon Roy era, let's turn over a new leaf players, which is interesting, I think.
So just to go back to the nickname thing, it's easy for me to say rolls off the tongue, Trout. Did anyone ever make like an anthropomorphic cartoon fish of Travis Outlaw? Because if not, someone really needs to get on that.
Paging Paul Navarre right now.
A-Kicks, get on it, man.
From our Blazers Edge staff who does the photo stats, we'd like to see that that image there with Travis Outlaw and a Trout. That's kind of scary to think about. Moving on, and I think this is probably where the picks for favorite role players start to get very arbitrary, and you guys are gonna see why here. I'm gonna throw out Fred Jones. So in the mid-2000s, Eric brought up the Jailblazers. I know that's not the fondest memories for Blazer fans of all time, but Z-Bo needed to get shipped out of town. That was pretty much, everybody was expecting that to happen in the summer of 2007. And we knew it was coming down the pipe. So when they announced Zach Randolph traded to New York for Steve Francis, and then they immediately waived Francis, I was like, are you freaking kidding me? You traded Z-Bo, a borderline all-star guy in Portland, for a washed-up Steve Francis, who you then decided to cut. But the silver lining of that for me was Fred Jones, because not only did you bring in a guy from, I believe it was Barlow High School out there east of Portland, local kid.
You are correct.
Local kid, 2004 slam dunk champion, but also a former University of Oregon Duck. So that's why I'm going to go ahead there and pick Freddie Jones. I was stoked to have that dude. I loved watching him in college. I'm a U of O grad, avid Ducks follower, followed Ducks basketball quite a bit at the time. I watched him a ton with those teams with Aaron Brooks, Luke Jackson, Luke Ridenour. Really loved those guys. So to have those guys, have one of those guys come to Portland, I think Luke Jackson may have got a tryout with the Blazers at some point too. At any rate, to get a Duck in a Blazer uniform finally, that was exciting for me, and that's why Fred Jones makes my list.
Yeah, and unfortunately for Freddie, he's actually kind of, his outcome with the Blazers is actually kind of a sad story. I don't remember the exact details, but I believe he waived a player option year to be traded to his hometown team with the understanding they would take care of him after the fact. And then I forget all the details, but basically he got screwed in the end, and they ended up trading him away from the Blazers after a very short time, even though he had made some financial concessions so he could play for them a little more on the long-term side. So it was kind of a case of the NBA is a businessman coming back to bite someone, unfortunately.
Not everybody can be Mark Cuban, you know?
How do you treat the 04 slam dunk champ like that, man? That's a bummer, dude. Whoever did that, Nash, Patterson, I'm calling you guys out on that one.
Guess they're not joining the podcast anytime soon.
That's a great suggestion. I'll ring them up.
I'm guessing, Brandon, you don't have any Oregon State Beavers that you can put on your list, do you?
No, I have. My next player on my list is about as far from Corvallis as you can get.
That's where all of us want to be, by the way.
Uh-huh. Where's that?
As far away from Corvallis as we could possibly get.
I think 99% of the reason why Fred Jones made your list is because he's a Duck, and for no other reason. I'm glad you at least admitted that that was part of your calculus there. So from the very far away and beautiful country of Germany, we have Detlef Schrempf.
Oh,
of course. Okay. Yeah, part of that star-studded kind of everyone was slightly past their prime Blazers teams. And I think he was at least 36, 37. He was at the very end of his career by the time he joined Portland. But at least the first, I think he played here for 2 years. The first year he was relatively useful. The second year, you know, he was getting older. But I will admit that part of the reason why I liked him so much, I was most familiar with him when he had a 4 or 5 year run with the Seattle Supersonics. And that was back when I was a little kid in school and I wanted a new haircut. And for whatever reason, the two players that I looked to for like a cool haircut, even though this is like the opposite of a cool haircut, was Detlef Schrempf and Chris Mullin. So I went to the barbershop downtown Corvallis. Shout out to Dar. I said, barber, hook me up one of those flat tops. And I looked great. And so Pretty much his hairstyle is the reason why he's making my list as one of the best Blazer role players for me.
You might
so
be...
two things.
Oh my god,
we're gonna need I think we're gonna need pictures of that, because I don't know if I can believe I hope that's not true for your sake.
It's extraordinarily true. It's about as true as anything has ever been. I had butch wax. I thought I was such a badass. You had no idea.
Did you bleach the hair too? You get the blonde Chris Mullen look?
No, that was later. I did the bleach later. I had like the undercut bowl haircut with the bleach tips. Yeah, we could do a whole episode on hair. I mean, I'm down with that.
Only in Corvallis would somebody go into the barber and say, "Give me the Detlef Shrimp."
Yo, barber, just ruin it for me.
Oh, Eric, do you have anyone?
Well, let me just jump in there. And so, fun fact about Detlef Shrimp, he was almost more than a role player back in the day, because when he was playing for Dallas, he won Sixth Man of the Year twice in a row. So he actually had some really, really solid years in the league. I don't want Portland fans to just remember his time with the Blazers. Also, if you go back and search for Detlef Shrimp Dallas and look up some images, he had the Larry Bird terrible white man blonde mustache for way too long, circa 1986 or 87. So, yeah. Brandon, it could have been worse.
You know who else had a similar looking mustache around that time was Sabonis. If you look at Sabonis when he played for USSR, he was rocking it. Unfortunately, I couldn't grow a mustache when I was 10, 11, so bummer.
Not enough mustaches around these days.
Think of Myers Leonard every year for Movember. By the way, that means Myers Leonard's contract. We get 4 more years of a Myers Leonard contract for 1 month every year. Thumbs up on that.
Hidden value in that 4-year contract there. Every November, we get to see the stash.
I'm going to tease it now. I think later on during the summer when we hit the real doldrums, it might be time for Myers Madness GIF party. And we should find the best Myers GIFs and have a tournament to see which is the ultimate Myers GIF, because he makes some pretty awesome faces when he's out on the court.
And he's pretty active on Twitter. I bet if we pinged him enough, he would actually offer a suggestion or two of his own. So let's get on that.
Absolutely. Eric, I know that after after the Detlef Shrimp pick here, you have someone interesting to bring to the table.
Yeah, he's not as interesting, but he's actually another member of the 2000 Blazers. And I'm going to go with Greg Anthony.
Nice.
And I really liked his tenacity and what he brought to the defensive end. I don't know how many of the fans remember this, but Damon Stoudemire, you know, the offensive wizard of the time, actually sat a lot in the fourth quarter of games with that 2000 team, because Greg Anthony was often brought in for his defense and his perimeter ability to stop the opposing point guard. He wasn't a true point guard in that sense, but he was a 40% three-point shooter as well. And so when you have Scottie Pippen and Steve Smith, Scottie Pippen's obviously a great point forward. Steve Smith is another guy who was a decent passer. When you have those two guys on the court with you, it's okay to go with someone like Greg Anthony, who's not going to maybe distribute quite as well. And that made him probably one of the original 3-and-D players in the NBA, and the Blazers almost won a championship with him. So he's always stood out to me as a great quintessential role player for that 2000 team.
Definitely an underrated dude, and he went on to, and still is, you know, have a solid broadcasting career. I believe a lot of it's been spent with NBA TV. So Greg Anthony, solid guy. I think I drafted him two, three years ago in the, we had the all-time draft for the teams, and I made a couple bad picks there, but I think Greg Anthony was one of my really good value picks. I nabbed him in like the 7th or 8th round. He was still available. And I think I ended up slotting him in as my starting point guard. Legit guy. And I think that, you know, we don't necessarily remember him as much, but like you mentioned, he was a really important guy for those Blazers in the fourth quarter, Eric.
I could safely say I can't imagine a scenario where Greg Anthony is the starter on my all-time Blazers draft team.
Oh, you have no clue how hard it was to find, you know. Okay, I didn't think I was going to bring this back up because I didn't want to hear about it from readers and listeners anymore, but I picked Jarrett Jack at number 19 to be my start. That's how thin the all-time point guards list in Portland was. Everybody had got Damon Stoudemire, Damian Lillard, Who else am I missing here from the 80s and the 70s? There's
Rod Strickland, Terry Porter, yeah. Danny Ainge, Lionel Hollins.
Exactly. Rod Strickland was gone at that. Even Rod freaking Strickland was gone at the point I was drafting. I took Jarrett Jack, took Greg Anthony in the later rounds. He's rounded out my team pretty well, but I still got bashed for that one, probably deservedly so, for taking Jarrett Jack and Dale Davis back-to-back in the third and fourth round. But moving on from that, I'm going to go ahead and combine two names here into one round. I'm going to say Nate McMillan and Torian Green. Torian Green makes that list because before that season he played in Portland as a second round pick. It was probably 08, 09, 07, 08, or 08, 09. Nate McMillan said, I like Torian Green. He's probably going to help us win a few games this year. Torian Green went to probably only appear in a handful of games, and the majority of it was garbage time. Needless to say, very little contribution on the floor, but for that quote alone, he makes my list. And Nate McMillan is on my list as an all-time great role player for the Blazers, because when the Blazers were suffering a litany of injuries at some point in the mid-2000s or so when he was coaching, Nate McMillan, flashback to his playing days, throws the uniform back in to get on the court with the guys in practice, tears his freaking Achilles. How's that for a role player for you, man? You got your coach, puts on the basketball shorts, gets out there with the guys, and gives up a pretty solid sacrifice there to help the team in practice.
I don't have a lot to say about Torian Green, but Nate McMillan, I mean, I think by the end of his tenure here in Portland, McMillan was getting bagged on for a lot of reasons, and many of them were legitimate, and shout out to him now, head coach of the Indiana Pacers, hoping for all the success in the world. But I mean, obviously he oversaw the transition of the Blazers from a team that nobody really wanted to follow to a team that people cared about again. And was that all of his influence? No, absolutely not. But a good amount of it was. So for me, I mean, I will always have kind of a positive kind of feeling left from the Nate McMillan era. Yeah, his rotations were a little questionable sometimes, maybe a little bit stubborn. I can remember far too many times when Nicola Batum in particular, and to be fair, Batum is somewhat mercurial himself, where he would go on this hot streak and be really engaged, playing good defense and involved in the offense, and then just be like, yep, come on out. Like, it's time for you to come out of the game. It's like, what are you doing, dude? So legitimate gripes aside, I definitely have relatively positive feelings for Nate McMillan.
Also, after he lost his job with the Blazers, this is one of the all-time classy moves that I can remember. Taking out a full-page ad in the Oregonian, thanking Portland Trailblazers fans for supporting him in his time with the Blazers. So Nate McMillan, classy guy, solid role player helping out the team with practice.
Yeah, for sure. So my fourth pick, maybe not noted so much for his contributions on court, but for his legend and lore off the court, in the financial ledger, we're talking about Rafe LaFrentz and the famous Rafe LaFrentz expiring contract. If you have been following Blazers Edge for long enough, then the acronym RLEC is something that is burned into your memory. I mean, this is a guy who got a 7-year, $70 million contract in 2002. Remember that the salary cap at that time was $40 million, right? So that's the equivalent of about a $25 million a year contract now. He ended up, you know, when the Blazers traded for him, he was kind of at the tail end of that contract. At that point, it was clear that he was overvalued. It should be said that part of that trade netted the Blazers the pick that ended up becoming Brandon Roy, so that's a huge win there. But I remember the last half of that season, or rather the last season he was here with the team, it was all about that expiring contract. What are the Blazers going to do with it? You know, who are they going to trade with? What kind of value are they going to get in return for this massive expiring contract? And Eric, you might know kind of the ins and outs and particulars of the financials. This was kind of my first foray into CBA stuff and salaries. Not before that, I'd been more of a casual fan, but nothing ever happened, right? And that was like one of the most kind of unsatisfying season-long arcs that I've ever experienced. It was like they're going to get something so amazing for this, and it just kind of felt like the Blazers, they felt like they were going to get ripped off or something, and they just didn't make a move and ended up getting absolutely nothing for him.
They did get something amazing, as Blazer fans the last several years can attest. Cap space.
Woo, cap space.
Yeah, but that cap space all went away when Darius Miles played five games for the Grizzlies. Oh
man,
if
we had a list of least, oh my goodness, that I mean,
it's just funny that you mentioned that, and that was like the Blazers were like threatening that if any team played Darius Miles for enough games to kind of re-trigger that contract, that they'd sue them. That's a great way to do business.
Steve Miller, man. Shout out to Steve, former Portland Trailblazers president Steve Miller on that one. Eric, who do you got rounding out the tail end of your list here for favorite role players of all time?
This was tough. I got a couple honorable mention guys, but one of them's a comedy guy and the other one's he didn't do much with the Blazers. So I'm going to go with a true role player, a two-time Portland Trailblazer for a total of about five seasons. We're going to go old school. Wayne Cooper started out as a starting center for the team in the early to mid 80s, was traded away in the infamous Kiki Vandeweghe trade, which I'm sure the old timers will lament in the comments section. And then he came back to the Blazers in the late 80s and had a couple seasons basically as Kevin Duckworth's backup. Most noteworthy was probably the 1990 playoffs when he had to help slow down David Robinson while Duckworth was out with a broken hand suffered in the first round against Dallas. Ultimately, the Blazers prevailed in seven games, and he was a pretty solid backup center as far as backup centers go in that era.
I really appreciate you bringing it back to the early and mid 80s there, because not only is that in general one of my favorite time periods for culture, music, and movies, but with the Blazers, I feel like that's kind of a forgotten era that we just you have the tail end of the championship year 77, then you had the end of the Bill Walton era there, and then you have in the 90s, the late 80s and 90s, you have Clyde Drexler and those NBA finals teams, and I think squashed there in the middle that we often forget about and don't talk about enough are those 80s teams. So I appreciate you, Eric, going back to that time period and bringing up a guy like Cooper, who we wouldn't necessarily be thinking about a heck of a lot in 2016.
Yeah, and actually, a double shout out to Wayne Cooper. I think that he was the first Portland Trailblazers player I had as a basketball card, because he came back and played with the team back in the late 80s, early 90s. It was like, I think it was the 89-90 Fleer. And I just remember I was pretty young. I think I was like 5 years old. And I remember Wayne Cooper has a special place in my heart. Shout out.
Shout out Wayne Cooper. That might be the first one he's gotten a long time, but we haven't forgotten about you here on the Blazers Edge weekend podcast. So I'm gonna wrap here just by throwing out some honorable mentions, some guys that were on my list but didn't necessarily make the cut. So the first one here is going to be Craig the Rhino Smith. He makes the cut for me. Actually, I'm just going to say the next one because they make the cut for the same reason. Alan Cool Breeze Crabb. Craig the Rhino Smith, Alan Cool Breeze Crabb. I think it's pretty obvious why I picked these guys. I think they're two of the best all-time nicknames in Portland, so they're on my list as honorable mentions. And then I got Blaze the Trail Cat because I think...
See,
this is exactly why I have Blaze on my list, because I think adult fans really don't like Blaze the Trail Cat. They don't know what this, cat, whatever you want to call it. It's confusing to look at. You don't know what it is. The dunks aren't that spectacular. The t-shirt cannon, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? Like, Blaze is there for the kids, and the kids, I think, really seem to like Blaze the Trail Cat. So Blaze makes my honorable mention.
Thank you for articulating why he's terrible.
You know, it's funny, your three honorable mentions, you got the rhino, the crab, and the cat. Obviously, you're an animal person. One thing that Blaze the Trail Cat does really well, it's that classic mascot move when they have the big head and they kind of like nod their head up and down really fast, like, yeah, and they put the finger up like, number one. He does that really, really well. So shout out to whoever's in the Blaze the Trail Cat costume, has absolutely stunning neck muscles.
Exactly. Blaze, I think I'm not saying that adult fans should, you know, get behind Blaze and be cheering the Trail Cat on by any stretch. But I just think any mascot who's there is there specifically for the kids. And I think the kids seem to really enjoy Blaze.
Well, judging by the length of Eric's beard, I could only guess that he wish that the Blazers mascot were a buffalo. To be fair, like the Portland Trailblazers, like, you know, their logo is a weird pinwheel thing. It's not a wagon, right? Their mascot is a cat, not a buffalo. I hope that maybe if there's a rebranding in the next couple of years that we go back to that kind of Wild West Oregon Trail type theme.
No rebranding.
Or maybe we could do like really kind of double down on the Oregon Trail thing and do like a 1980s Macintosh computer type deal.
This is an entirely different podcast. I am so vehemently opposed right now. I would have the hottest hot mitts ever put on for this because I cannot stand that you're suggesting rebranding even as a joke.
Okay,
not to be taken.
What if Kevin Calabro came down from the annals of Seattle Supersonics history down to Portland and brought with him the Sasquatch to replace Blaze? Would that be okay with you?
We find our own mascot who doesn't suck.
Unbelievable.
Didn't the Blazers renounce the rights to Chris Kamen already? So we kind of missed the boat on that.
Brady, do you have anybody on your honorable mentions list? I know this is going to be probably pretty out there, yeah?
Yeah, I have one quick one. The first and possibly the only to this date player from South Korea, 7'3", 305 pounds, Ha Sung Jin. And I don't think anyone's gonna forget that picture of him where he's looking so adorable. A perfect Valentine's Day card for your sweetheart. Go get yourself a Ha Sung Jin card. Unbelievable.
You just made me remember I forgot to add Ruben Boomche Boomche to my honorable mentions list. There's so many guys going back to that point in time. I got a Richie Fram, I guess. Dan Dickow. I mean, the mid-2000s Trailblazers. Ha Sung Jin is a great pick.
They're all can't miss, really.
Eric, who do you have to contribute here as we get to the very ends of our honorable mentions list of all-time favorite role players in a Portland Trailblazers uniform?
I got two guys. Number one, Mario Elie. He was a journeyman who came from the CBA, the International Basketball League, the Golden State Warriors, a whole bunch of, you know, he had a whole bunch of history. And then the Blazers kind of kicked off his pro career in earnest, and he would go on and be a great role player for the Rockets, Spurs, a couple other teams. So Mario Elie's 1 year in Portland always stood out to me, 1992-93. And then the second guy I'm going to go with, and I think Brandon, as the political expert around here, will appreciate this one. Almost Oregon Governor Chris Dudley.
Not because of
almost being the governor, not because of the weird hitch in the free throw that always drew lane violations, but because he had a rule named after him, the Chris Dudley rule, and the Blazers basically circumvented the salary cap at one point to re-sign him to a longer contract, and then the league went back and closed the loophole. And there's two things there. Number one, I can't imagine an era where it was worth your time to figure out how to break the rules to re-sign Chris Dudley to a longer contract. And number two, that rule became a precursor to the early bird rights, which are going to be the rule that causes the Blazers to probably lose Festus Ezeli if he works out well. So Chris Dudley's legacy lives on right now in the Portland Trail Blazers uniform.
So your explanation of his legacy is much more tactical than mine. I have two extremely quick stories about Chris Dudley. One is when I was a kid, I loved participating in those Elks free throw shooting competitions and did relatively well in some of them. And the last year I participated, I went to regionals because I got second place in the city, went to regionals. And I remember I missed like three in a row. Like I got stage fright or something happened. I couldn't handle the bright lights. And someone yelled out from the crowd, it was a parent, which was like really mean. They went, "Come on, Chris Dudley." And I knew exactly what they meant. And I felt super bad, made me feel terrible. I was like 11 or 12, something like that. I was pretty young.
Some full grown adult was in the stands at a free throw shooting contest, heckling a fourth grader.
That's absolutely true. And it worked because I did even worse after that. So shout out to crazy, spiteful parent in the crowd. Second quick story. When I worked for the governor's office, we actually received mail addressed to Oregon Governor Chris Dudley, as Eric just described. If you remember the gubernatorial race where Kitz Hopper got his historic third term, it took a few days to sort out because of the votes coming in from Multnomah County, yada, yada, yada. We were like very, very close to having a former Trailblazer with absolutely no political experience, by the way, as governor. And we did get mail actually addressed to Governor Chris Dudley. So maybe it came from an alternate universe. We will never know.
Holy guacamole. I didn't realize that that governor race at the time was that close, that it was that close to having Chris Dudley be the governor. That would have been very interesting.
Like, I don't want to go too far deep into it, but I remember I was like hitting refresh on the Oregon Live page, and it went at least, it might have been a couple days, but it was at least until the next day that the results came in. It was extremely close.
Wait, so you were literally refreshing Oregon Live, trying to figure out who your boss was going to be for 4 years?
I wasn't working there at the time. I was just interested in politics. But yeah, that's what little political junkies do. They hit refresh, see those Secretary of State results roll right in. Absolutely.
That's fair.
Look at that. Brandon Goldner couldn't wait to find out about the 2012 governor race?
2010.
2010 there. Man, I cannot believe that's time flies 6 years ago. Speaking of time flying, how's that for a segue? We are here at the end of this podcast. Eric, I want to thank you very much for coming on, dude. It's always fun, to talk analysis, get deep within the cap stuff, all that kind of stuff during the year. But I really love this time of year in the summer where we can talk about favorite role players of all time and stuff like that. So I want to thank you very much for coming on this week. We'll have you on again soon, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Anytime I could talk about Chris Dudley and Torian Green in the same podcast is a banner day for Blazers Edge.
All right, that is what the off season is all about. I love having shows like that on the Blazers Edge Weekend Podcast. That's episode 158. We're all wrapped up with. I want to thank you very much for joining us. Also, a huge thanks to Blazers Edge staff writer Eric Griffith for coming on the show again.
Yes, thank you, Eric, and your beard, which has the ferocity of a thousand suns. Per usual, our intro and outro music is brought to you by Odar. If you want to check out more of his work, which is really good, by the way, you can check it out at soundcloud.com/odarbeats. Please tune in to the Blazers Edge Midweek Podcast with managing editor Dave Deckard and contributor Dan Moraine. Chris and I are taking the week off next week, so tune into the Fanalist with Tara and Joe. And for Chris Lucia, I am Brandon Goldner. And remember, if you tweak your neck, it's probably a good idea to not go on a roller coaster. Said barber, hook me up one of those flat tops, and I looked great.